Do you have anything that comes to mind of what you would love to tell your younger self if you had to do it all over again?
Start sooner.
Yeah, exactly. Start sooner. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews with short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly of short-term rental investing. Today, I've got Steve and Maggie Schrag joining us, and I appreciate you guys joining us, and I'm excited. These are always our favorite episodes, my favorite episodes, our listeners' favorite episodes, and so I appreciate you letting people listen in on to the journey into short-term rental investing.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be on. Thanks for inviting us. Excuse our dog here. She wants to be.
What's that? Okay. What's the dog's name? Because I didn't introduce Bella. All right. So we've got Steve, Maggie, and Bella today for the podcast. So that's awesome.
I love it.
She was a big help in our setup at our latest in Steamboat, you know.
Yeah. She was on top of it, right?
She was there with us for sure.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, let's talk about the, I always love to start with just the backstory. I love to know what paid the bills, what you guys do, you know, what got you interested in real estate investing, and then ultimately into short-term rental investing. Then we'll start diving into that, the journey of short-term rentals.
Sounds good. Yeah. So we have been interested in real estate for a long time. I'd say it took us a long time to jump into anything. And then, and we ourselves purchased, I think this is probably the house we're in now is probably the sixth personal home we purchased for ourselves as we kind of, my job kind of took me back and forth across the country. So we're moving every few years and buying another house. And we never had, I would say the time or the capital, like at least those are the excuses we make now as to why we didn't jump into real estate investing earlier. It was about 7 years ago when we moved to Colorado that we bought our first long-term rental. So we had a long-term rental here for the last 7 years. It did very well, had very low vacancy. During those 7 years, I think we had maybe a few months of vacancy and that's it. So it did very well for us. And then I guess it was probably a couple of years ago that we started getting more serious about looking at other asset classes, I was just consuming all the content I could, whether it was fix and flips, BRRRR strategy, wholesaling. I was just consuming a ton of content and short-term rentals as well. And we were on a trip for my son's baseball team, and one of his coaches was a real estate investor. And we started talking, and he started talking about short-term rentals. And that's what really got me more motivated in short-term rentals.
Did he own short-term rentals?
And he got in at a good time, you know, as you talk about, like, you know, he got in at the, right. Some of them were during COVID. Yeah. And so he was just sight unseen buying places. He had a couple properties he's never even been to that are short-term rentals that are just performing very well for him now. So hearing that really motivated us to look more and get more focused on short-term rentals.
Yeah. And so you still had the long-term rental in Colorado.
We actually, when our youngest moved out of the house, went on to college, we sold our primary and moved into our long-term rental.
Okay.
As a way of downsizing without having to pick up a high interest mortgage.
Yeah.
And so we were able to take that equity out, and that's what really fueled this latest purchase, this second short-term rental we have in Steamboat.
Okay. Yeah. So we just, and we'll show all of these properties, but take me to the first one. Where was the first property? So you started getting introduced to it from, you know, the baseball coach who was buying these properties, and, you know, at the right time when everybody was just looking like a genius and making money hand over fist, right? It was like, there was that 2 year period where it's like having toilet paper during COVID. If you had a short term rental, you were making a lot of money.
Yeah. So I would say that we joined Vodacy in April of 24. Yeah. Right. So it's been about a year and a half now. And the primary driver for me for joining Vodacy was the underwriting. Like, I did not feel confident in my underwriting on a short-term rental. Long-term rental is super easy. You kind of have, it's more, much more fixed income. It's much more fixed expenses. Short-term rental, I just didn't feel comfortable doing that underwriting.
Yeah.
So that's why we joined Vodacy. And of course, we found out Vodacy is much more than that, from the Vodacy touch to, you know, the marketing piece of it, selecting the right location, the right property, all of that. We learned that it was much more than just the underwriting, but that's why we initially joined. So when we joined in April, and I think we closed in our first place in, do you remember, was it August of 24? Mm-hmm. August of 24, we closed on our first short-term rental in Branson.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We dropped our son at college and drove to Missouri.
To Missouri? Right. Where was he going to college at? Where,
in Denver.
Like, was it close?
He's in Denver, yeah.
Is in Denver. You're like, you dropped him off. You're like, hey, we got some money to spend. We're not paying for this kid anymore. Except for maybe you are. Maybe you're paying for
He's still on the payroll, unfortunately.
He's still on the payroll. Yeah,
once they quit doing the travel sports, you get a raise.
That's true.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that is so true, Maggie. It's like we were talking about that at lunch, actually, with Jacob and Jake. Jake doesn't have kids yet. Jacob's is just growing up. Mine are a little bit further ahead of theirs. And we were talking about the cost of all those different sports. So you're exactly right. They stopped doing the travel sports. You feel like you got a raise. So we went straight to Branson. So what, that's a little bit of a road trip from Denver. So where, what spurred that? Was that somebody that you were familiar with that owned there already? Like what brought you guys to Branson?
Good question. I was doing the evaluation using AirDNA for a number of locations. I just looked earlier today. There were probably like 12 different localities we were looking at. Branson was one that floated to the top. We were looking in, you know, the Phoenix area. We were looking in New Mexico. I tried looking in Colorado, but the cost of acquisition, similar to Utah, incredibly high. Yeah. So at that time, we didn't feel like that was right. So I started talking to my brother about it. My brother lives in Springfield, Missouri, which is just less than an hour from Branson. Yeah. Started talking to him about it. He was interested in joining us and partnering with us on it. So we went 50-50 partnership on that one. We closed on, a Monday, and we were on the OTAs in a week. So we went very fast. And I think probably one of the learnings for us was we didn't take the time to really learn the Vodacy touch. And we didn't really take the time to really learn about what we needed to do to set it up right. And we're probably suffering from that a little bit. We're positive cash flow, but we're leaving a lot on the table because we didn't do that. And as you've talked about, as time goes on, you start to see the declining revenue. And we're starting to see that, like this December, not nearly as good as last December. I don't think we have any bookings in January yet. And last year at this time, I'm sure we did. So our intent is in the first half of 26 to go back to Branson and do it right. Make sure we're putting the money into I think we're 95% of the way there. We got the case goods. Feel good there. Yeah. We feel like all the linens and all the pillows and all, you know, mostly we're 95% of the way there. We need to do the artwork, and then we need to get in and do the lifestyle photography like we did in Steamboat. And then we will relaunch at that time with a new property manager. So it's a fresh launch and go from there.
Love it. And it's really interesting as you dive into the game, right? You got in thinking, oh, hey, listen, we want to understand underwriting. We bought a quality asset in a quality area. And you hear me talk about all the time, there's three aspects to the game, right? Quality asset, quality area, creating a unique experience and setting it up to deliver that unique experience for a target audience, right? And then ultimately how to articulate it. What are the market, how are we going to market this? How are we going to stand out, right? And you just mentioned, hey, we bought a quality asset in a quality area. That's that acquisition phase, which is what you got very dialed into in the very beginning, because that's what you're like, hey, listen, this is what I joined Vodacy to learn. But then we realize, especially if we don't realize it right up front, we realize it pretty quickly a year or two in, that, oh, man, I got to dial those other two things in as well. Because like you said, it might be paying for itself and it can still be a good quality asset for you. But man, when you look at the actual underwriting, you look at how much you're leaving on the table, it's pretty motivating to say, okay, I'm going to dial this back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's right. And sometimes those are hard decisions on the beginning, and sometimes you just don't know, right? Sometimes you're like, man, I didn't realize, you know, what that really meant. I didn't realize how to put that together. And then you go do it, you know, from the very beginning and dial in all three of those phases, like you're doing in Colorado and like you guys just did. And you start to realize, oh, there is a big difference on how these properties are set up and marketed and everything else, right?
Yep.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
So on that, I mean, because Branson's a good market. Branson's a, you know, and I always say, I like to highlight the journey and, you know, some of the mistakes we make that we, if we could do it again, we would do it differently. And one of those is a very common mistake when I audit properties. People naturally, even if you don't understand the underwriting, a lot of times you naturally pick good properties in good areas. Mm. And so, and then when you do fully understand the underwriting, you start to look and see how much money you're leaving on the table. But most people don't dial in those second two phases, right? Because we think it's a beautiful property. I've seen your property in Branson. Like you said, you're the what people don't realize, you're way closer to that money and that those dollars mm-hmm. than you realize. Now it takes some work and effort and money to put into that property to, you know, to bring it to life and create that immersive experience and then ultimately create those lifestyle photos. But you're, like you said, you're 95% there, right? You've got the good property. It's furnished beautifully. You've got a really good, cohesive design in there as far as furnishings. It's going to match everything. Now you just got to bring it to life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So that is on the agenda. You guys are planning on that for 2026?
Yep.
Definitely.
Love it.
That's
love
the next it. Step.
Love to hear that. We need to. So this is like setting up part two of this conversation. We'll have you back on a year later. We'll say, okay, how did that help the performance? Right,
it'll be a good case study for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So we got that one. You partnered with your brother, it sounds like, on that one, and then what? You know, take me through those next steps of, you know, moving into property number two. What was kind of the motivation there? You know, how did we decide those markets, the next market? Because you kind of mentioned that you were wanting to do the Colorado property in the beginning, and now we actually decided to do a Colorado property.
Yeah, the big unlock for us being able to do Colorado was selling our primary residence and taking that equity and being able to put a bigger down payment down, and then also having the money to do the artwork and the photo shoot and all of that.
Yeah.
And so that's really what unlocked that. We put our primary on the market in March, right? And it took us about almost 3 months to sell. Yeah. And it's kind of funny because we said, let's list it for 3 months. If it doesn't sell, we'll pull it off the market and try another year. And getting close to that 3 months, we finally got an offer that made sense. We accepted it, moved into our long-term rental. And then we started... I think we had decided Steamboat before we sold our house. We kind of knew that was kind of where we wanted to be. We have some friends that have a place up there as well. And so we just love that area. And so is that we haven't used Branson much. We'll probably use Steamboat a lot more if I can get people to stop booking it. Because right now it's pretty well booked through ski season already. So, but it's an area that I think the one thing we love about it also is it's more local. It's a 3-hour drive. So we were up there a lot. How many round trips did we make? A lot.
Too many. I spent most of November there.
you were back and forth a lot, huh? It's not a bad place to have to go visit, though. I don't know too many people that are bummed that they have to spend time in Steamboat.
I haven't enjoyed the shoulder season, you know, and the restaurants are even shutting down just to...
That's so me. Like, I love my properties during the shoulder season when nobody's there. You know, the restaurants aren't, half of them aren't even open. You know, it's some of my, like, almost every property I have, it's my favorite time to go spend time there. I love the shoulder seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. So we enjoyed that. Some big learnings there, being in a mountain town. It's a little bit different than being in, you know, greater Denver area, getting stuff to it. One of the things we learned, like a week before the photo shoot, we ordered, I don't know how many, you know, 60 line items off Amazon, had them delivered to the condo. And what we learned, our condo didn't have a mailbox. There's no mailbox at our condo.
Yep.
And so a FedEx, UPS, no problem. They just drop it off at the front door of the condo. The things that came USPS kept getting rejected. USPS couldn't deliver them.
And we didn't have a P.O. box because we didn't know
any better. We thought everything was just going to show up at the property. So we're scrambling to reorder things going, you know, days before the photo shoot, just to make sure we drove to the post. As soon as we realized this, we drove to the post office at like 4:30 on in the afternoon, just before it closed down, and tried to get our stuff because we know it's in the back somewhere. It's in the back of they haven't sent it back to Amazon yet.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that didn't work out for us. So we opened a P.O. box and then we started getting stuff delivered there.
Getting stuff.
So when you Amazon, there aren't Amazon trucks either in those.
I live in an area, a mountain area, and you would never see an Amazon truck, but you'll see somebody pull up in their, you know, their Honda Accord and they pull an Amazon stuff out of the back trunk, you know? It's like, so they just have these local contractors that they contract with to get them up there for you. And so it's or the postal service, right? And so it ends up being a little bit, receiving and deliveries in those areas can be definitely a challenge. And you don't think a lot of that because Steamboat's not exactly, you know, a one-stoplight town. I mean, it's a major resort town still. I mean, most people have heard about it. It's a Class A resort, but it's still in the mountains in Denver or outside of Denver in Colorado. And it's, you know, you still have those logistical challenges with the deliveries. And so on the setup, Maggie, you said you were spending most of November there. You guys then chose to do a lot of the setup yourself.
Yeah, we did all the setup ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And most of what was there when we bought it, we kept. Mm-hmm. We changed the mattresses, the bed frames,
chairs,
some side chairs. We kept
dining.
The dining table we changed. We kept the pullout couch. And then we didn't have to do any remodeling because it was already done.
Artwork, you guys did all artwork, the custom, we did, yeah. Hung all the custom artwork and everything. You did all that. Yeah.
It's actually it's one of the parts of the process we enjoy. We enjoy doing it in Branson, building the furniture, setting it up, putting up the artwork.
Yeah.
It wasn't super complex for us.
That's awesome. And I've heard that. Like you either love it or hate it. It seems like on the setup when you talk to investors and saying, hey, listen, it's a lot of work, right? But if it's the work that you enjoy doing and you like to see it put together and coming together and you have you have that sense of accomplishment by doing it, you know, and putting that time and effort in, it is, I've definitely heard people say there's a lot of rewarding parts of that and they enjoy it. I'm the opposite. I don't like putting furniture together and stuff. So I usually send somebody to do it. But I usually still try to do it every once in a while, especially with the family. It's kind of fun to get the family out there doing it together. So you mentioned, I'm going to back up just a titch. You mentioned you kind of decided you wanted Steamboat and you understand, you know, we talked about Steamboat being a high acquisition type of a market. And I want to talk a little bit about your buy box, what you were looking for, how patient you had to be to find the right type of a property. Because you guys got a very good proximity property. I mean, your proximity, you're really ski in, ski out. You're right on the ski slopes with the condo complex. Did you have that much of the details of where you wanted to be, those types of things developed into what you wanted to buy? And then also take me through, I always say there's four levers that we're looking at when we're analyzing a deal. It's cash flow, note pay down, appreciation, and tax advantages. And a lot of new investors, they focus so much on cash flow, but this is not a high cash flowing market, right? The Steamboat is one of those highly appreciating markets. And I know that was important for you guys. And so take me through a little bit about the decisions on what the property goals were, the buy box, as far as, you know, what we were really looking for in that market.
Yeah, we wanted something close to the ski resort. So like from a proximity standpoint, everything we looked at was basically near the ski resort.
Yeah.
I think some of the trade-offs we had to make, like we kind of wanted more of that resort type setting that would have a pool and would have shuttle, you know, built in that could get people around town. That was one of the trade-offs we made in choosing the ski in, ski out, because there's no pool. There's a hot tub, but we lose that amenity of the pool.
Yeah.
I think we knew we just wanted to be near the resort area, near close to walking distance from restaurants and walking distance from some of those areas. And then we only looked at condos just from an affordability standpoint. Any single family up there was out of our out of our range for sure. As far as in the underwriting process, so you made the point of the cash flow. The cash flow actually we think it'll actually do okay.
Yeah.
The appreciation, though, I think I had on one of your Tuesday calls, we talked about it, and you suggested just going to ChatGPT, ask what appreciation has been for the last 20 years for that zip code.
Yep.
I did that, and actually ChatGPT gave me all that, and I think it was like 5-7% is what it came up. But then ChatGPT said, would you like to know more about specific areas such as Storm Meadows? And Storm Meadows was exactly the property we were wanting to put an offer on. So I said, yep, give me that. And that was more like 9-11% just because of that. Again, it was that proximity.
Right on the hill. Yeah.
It's right in the, you know, ski in, ski out. And so that also in the underwriting made it look like a really good return over time. And then the other thing was the tax advantage as well. We are will easily qualify for material participation. We have already gone through the cost segregation process with Revo, with Mike's team. Yep. And so, yeah, it should be a huge benefit for our taxes for next year. It should really eliminate most of my W-2 taxes.
It's always fun to have Uncle Sam supplement those next purchases, right? Get some of that money back, and then we think about that property number three. Or exactly. we use it to bring property number one up to speed, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love the proximity in these, like, of your guys' property is awesome, right? And that helps with appreciation, it helps with cash flow, it helps with all those different things. I mean, and that's where looking at that, and to your point, a lot of times you trade off the cost, right? Single family home in those areas, they're skiing ski out in those Class A Western ski resort towns are ridiculously priced, right? They're really expensive. But a lot of times your option, if you want to be in the middle of the action, ski in, ski out, right by the restaurants, right by the resort area, a lot of them are going to be townhomes or condos, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be those resort style condos that have been built up. And a lot of them are older. They're not brand new because they were built, a while ago when those resorts, became really famous and popular. And so, but they've held up their value. They've been remodeled over time, and they're just, they're phenomenal. And obviously, you guys listening, you guys know that we post the links to these properties in the show notes, so you can go check them out for sure. So, as we're talking about this, I always want to mention that to the listeners that go check these properties out. One, we always say success leaves clues, but you can kind of see what we're talking about here. So. Challenges we talked about were, the logistics of the deliveries, other things like that. Were there any other challenges as you're going through this one and getting this one launched and set up that you're, what about regulations? One of the big things that we don't talk a lot about is regulations. Mm-hmm. Some of these markets have, more regulations than other. How is Steamboat area for regulations for when it comes to short-term rentals?
Steamboat's very well established what the rules are. Mm-hmm. Yep. So they have what's called the green zone, which we knew we were going to be in. We verified that. Green zone, yellow zone, red zone. Yellow zone, there are minimal, and you have to get on a waiting list if, they're the ones that are grandfathered in, and when one doesn't renew their license, it opens up. So you're gambling definitely even in the yellow, but we knew we were going to be in the green zone, and so that's very well established there.
Yeah,
they've kind of figured out those regulations a lot better than some of the other localities.
It's so nice we're seeing more and more of that, right? When I first started this, there was no regulations. Nobody knew what anybody wanted to do. So you were almost always buying in a gray area because it could change on you overnight. And then post COVID, and it got really popular around 2021, 2022, we started really seeing kind of that year of regulations. And so it's nice when you go now into these markets where you said it's very well established of where they want them, where they don't want them, and what we need to do to operate legally as a short-term rental. And so, a lot of people, when 2022 came and the sweeping regulations were hitting, and they were a lot of municipalities were redefining the zones of where they wanted stuff, it was really frustrating for a lot of owners. And I was kept saying, this is going to be really, really good. This is, you want to know where you can and can't operate. Like, I've been developing land and real estate for a long time. I can't go put a 7-Eleven on any corner that I want to, right? I have to have the right zoning, and the municipalities are going to say, yeah, we like, high density here. We like lower density over here. And that's nice as a short-term rental owner, when you're buying in these areas and you're spending a lot of money, that you have very clear, very clearly defined areas. And like you said, you knew where the green zone was, and you're like, hey, listen, this is where we're going to buy. We're not going to buy in the red or the yellow and take the chance, right?
Yeah. As far as other challenges, I think one of the things that we struggled with a little bit was just the patience of going through the design process, the procurement process. Because like I said, in Branson, we were like listed in a week.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that was a challenge for us because we wanted to go. We wanted to go. And we closed September 9, I think, on the place, and we went live November 23, just before Thanksgiving, we went live. So it was, and at the end of the day, it was 2 months, right? Just over 2 months.
Two and a half months or so.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that, because this is a big frustration that I don't think a lot of people really understand. And we need to do a better job of talking about it, because, like I said, our goal is always to help people walk into this with their eyes wide open. So we need to make sure. That's why I like to know about these challenges. And these conversations are so valuable, because one of the biggest frustrations when you're trying to do something, at least the way our view of the world is the right way to operate toward the top of the market, is it takes some time, and you do have to be patient. And that designs and being able to get it all put together and everything else, because you don't really want to do it and spend all that money until you own the property, right? But once you own the property, you want to be going. You want to launch it. You want to make money with this property. And a lot of times there is that, we usually say somewhere in that 8 to 10 week mark, that you're going to be kind of waiting. And that's about right where you guys were at, is right around that 8 to 10 week mark. And that it takes to get it launched. And it can be kind of frustrating in that time.
And if we had it to do over, we scheduled to pick the lock with Mike's team before closing, but we didn't schedule the
VSB and S&P.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. And so we lost a month just waiting to get on his calendar because of that. And we just kind of accepted that it made us nervous. But we just kind of accepted that's the way it was going to be. We were just going to lose that month because of that.
Yeah.
So, if we had it to do over again, we probably would have scheduled that to start so that we could get on his calendar right after close.
Yeah. And it sometimes is hard, because you're like, you're nervous to schedule it, because while you're under contract, you're doing your inspections, you're doing everything else, making sure the deal's actually going through, you're working with the bank. And so, it's like, sometimes just logistically, what I always tell people, plan on that couple months in the very beginning of not launching and being careful to just hold out and wait, because I'm a big believer when you do so, you launch and you have a really successful launch, and then ultimately it sets your property up to be really successful long term, because of that algorithm. And you guys are kind of experiencing that right now, right? So it's take me through
it's
the
been
launch.
A few weeks, but yeah, it's
You'll launch right before Thanksgiving, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously we're going into the holiday season, but this is also an odd ski season, because there's not a lot of snow right now, right? And I know that there's a lot of properties here in our backyard that are losing bookings. They're getting cancellations. A lot of Colorado properties are getting cancellations. You guys aren't seeing that, because you're saying, hey, there's a lot of people who still want to go experience that area for the holidays. And when you have a really good property, it's going to weather those types of storms, or lack of storms in the mountains. And so, but it does affect it. But you're noticing that you're saying, hey, listen, we're pretty much getting booked out. Like we've had a really nice launch on the calendar so far, right?
Mm-hmm. And we're booked almost from this Saturday, almost through mid-March.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah,
that's awesome. And a lot of that, I'm a big believer, a lot of that has to do with that patience you had in coming out and putting your best foot forward on that launch, right? And saying, hey, listen, now we're going to be one of the best properties in that. I mean, arguably, I would guess, and we'll look back in a year. I never like to hang on projections. We obviously are investors, and we project what our revenue is going to be, everything else. But I love to talk about actuals. Mm-hmm. My guess is you guys will be the top property in that complex for sure. Mm-hmm. When you have your running year, we'll look at it and go back. But it's also like you're seeing it right now in the launch. And then, you get between now and March, and we talked about this. I think Maggie, you and I talked about this a week or two ago, about we're already having to talk about raising prices and bump prices up a little bit, because those bookings are coming in, and we're getting those, further out than maybe we want to be booked sometimes. Sometimes I don't want to be booked all the way through March, right? I want to start bumping those prices up a little bit. And so it's a pretty exciting time. It's a fun thing to see them come to life after all the hard work and everything else. And you start to, the fun part now is, because you probably are still on the front end of seeing a lot of those reviews coming in, but you're probably starting to see a couple of them trickle in and what people are saying about it. Right. And those start to stack up, and it's really fun to be able to hear what other people are saying about our properties. It makes you like, always, especially when you launch a property, sometimes those first reviews, they feel better than the money we put in our bank account. It's like, just, all the nice things people say are kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the next step for us then is to figure out the optimization, maximization processes that you that we're looking forward to learning from you. Because in Branson, we really didn't lean into that. You know, we just weren't in a position to, quite frankly. So
yeah,
so that'll be a next step for us as well.
Yeah, it is. And it's fun. And it's really understanding those major phases when we launch. And then what you do is you start to realize, oh, man, now I don't have much to do. And so then we start thinking about the next property, because you work so hard in the acquisition, you work so hard during the setup. And even during that launch phase, right, you're really making any iterations you need to make based on reviews, based on pricing, or where things are coming in. And then you start to optimize and maximize, and then you just kind of set it and let it go, right? You're making sure that you've got this great asset, and then we just rinse and repeat, do it again. And so it makes it kind of fun. So what's next steps? Do we have any? I know we talked about the Branson property. I know we talked about next steps into 2026 is going to be let's maximize that one. Let's kind of revitalize and maximize that one to its fullest potential. And then is there any talks about building a bigger portfolio, going to different markets? What's the ultimate goal?
Yeah, the goal when we set out and started was we wanted one property a year. Yeah. And so that's still the goal, but we haven't really thought much about that next property at this point.
Yeah.
Beach.
Yeah.
Beach. That's what Teresa would tell me.
We kind of got the lake. We kind of got the mountain. Now I think beach is maybe next.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beaches, beach, sun, palm trees and beaches, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, that's fun. And it's, and what it takes now too is you start to say, hey, listen, we're starting to understand and we want to capitalize on that money that we're not going to pay Uncle Sam based on this property purchase, and kind of earmark it for the portfolio building, right? If that's the goal. And that's why I always tell people, it's like you get money in your pocket, back in your pocket from cash. I know we don't get our appreciation. I know we don't get our note pay down until we actually sell these properties, but we do get the cash flow. We do get the tax savings, and that stays in our pocket. And sometimes we don't realize that if we were disciplined about taking that and parlaying it to that next property, you're coming up with half the money maybe next time instead of the full amount, right? And so you can really accelerate. And so, well, that's fun. That's exciting. I love hearing that next one's on the horizon. You're well, I mean, you're still 2 years in and two properties in. So we're right on track, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, listen, I love these conversations. I could talk to you for a lot longer and we could kind of strategize about next steps and everything else. And I appreciate you letting everybody listen in on this. But I always like to ask at the end of it, because we talked about some of the lessons learned, but I also like to go back and say, if you could give yourself any advice, your younger self, and whether it's about the lessons learned in short-term rentals, just being able, getting started in something, do you have anything that comes to mind of what you would love to tell your younger self if you had to do it all over again?
Start sooner.
Yeah, exactly. Start sooner. That's exactly what I was going to say. I think I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad 20 plus years ago, and even then I was interested in real estate, and it took us a long time to finally pull the trigger. So I would have loved to have started this journey much, much sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is probably 98% of our answers are start sooner. It's so interesting. We all get real good at saying, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. We all do it, right? There's nobody that's immune to saying, man, I wish I would have started sooner. I wish I would have done that sooner. And we all feel like that, but man, you just got to make sure you keep giving yourself those reminders that life is short and, there's no real advantage in waiting. It's nice to just take some action. Even if you fail, you learn something new and you learn how it didn't work. Right. And so just take that action and do something and start sooner. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel either. There's plenty of people that are a few steps ahead of you. They're willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly, so you can kind of accelerate your progress. And so there's no reason in today's day and age, especially with the amount of information available, to sit on our hands unless we're just kind of keep kicking that ball down the line. And sometimes it's hard when we're comfortable, when we're doing well and we're working and paying the bills and our back's not necessarily against the wall. Sometimes it's hard to take that next step because it's a little scary and we don't want to screw up what we've already built. Right.
Yeah. That's
and
right.
So awesome, guys. Well, Steve, Maggie, I appreciate you both. I appreciate you joining me on the podcast and let people listen into our conversation. Those of you listening, we appreciate your time. We know it's valuable, and I always am very appreciative of you spending it with us. You guys know that we don't run ads or sponsorships. The whole time you're listening to this, you didn't get interrupted with commercials and listening to things you could buy or sponsor on. And so the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. And so if you guys have more than, you know, somebody that you know that would like to listen in, like you're listening in, share the show. Those things help us a lot. If you don't have anybody to share it with, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, and those platforms will share it with other people like you. And we appreciate that very, very much if you do so. The final, most important thing, though, that I ask you at the end of every episode, and it goes right along with what Steve and Maggie were saying, is they wish they would have started sooner. And so I always challenge you to pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.